Based on the Mormon belief that they believe that they are the lost tribe of Ephraim. And I started this study because I've heard Pastor mention it a lot. He mentions the Isaiah quote in chapter 7, verse 8, that Ephraim is a broken people, that they should not be a people anymore. And I've heard Pastor quote that over and over and over again. But I still had no idea as to why the Mormons would think that they are Ephraim, right? And so I did a little bit of a deep study. I'm like, okay, so I need to figure this out, because I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know why they would even think that in the first place, and I've heard Pastor mention it, but that's about the only thing I've ever heard Pastor say about it. Now, maybe he said something in the past that I missed or whatever the case is, but for myself, I needed to do a deep dive into Ephraim, and I wanted to see kind of the history of Ephraim as they go through the ages, right? And see why maybe there's something that I missed. Maybe there was something that the Mormons, you know, knew that I didn't know or whatever the case was. So I needed to do a deep dive. And so today is going to be kind of a deep dive on the history of Ephraim, right? I don't know that we'll get through all of it. This is probably going to be going to next week too. But I just wanted to see, you know, study the history of Ephraim to see maybe if there was something that I was missing. And throughout my study, I actually found it kind of comical that anyone would want to tie their religion to Ephraim, right? I found it absolutely kind of hysterical. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense based on my studies that I've done. And so we're going to go through a little bit of that today. But it doesn't make any sense why someone would want to tie their roots to Ephraim like this. Now, our study will start off in Genesis chapter 41. But there's not a whole lot of good here. There's not a whole lot of good that the Bible says about Ephraim. It starts good here in Genesis chapter 41, but there's a slow progression, and it just gets worse and worse to where, like I said, it just becomes comical that anyone would want to tie their roots to Ephraim at all. So our study starts in 41. Can I get that water? Okay, so in Genesis 41, in chapter 50, it says, "And unto Joseph were born sons before the years of the famine, which, as Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, He hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my afflictions." Now, I forgot to mention this before, but the Mormons also use the same book that we use, right? They also have the Book of Mormon, but they also use the King James Bible as their main for Bible. They're not using like an NIV. They're using the King James Version. So they have this information, the same information that we're going to go over. They have this same information, right? They're not using, you know, something like an NIV or an ESV or anything like that. They're using the same Bible we're using. So they have this same information, okay? So, and then it says in 52, "In the name of the second he called Ephraim, for God hath called me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction," okay? So we have two sons, right? Ephraim and Manasseh come from Joseph, right? Those are Joseph's two sons, right? And we know that later on in the history that Manasseh and Ephraim both become tribes in Israel. They're part of the 12 tribes of Israel, right? And so the firstborn we see here is Manasseh, right? And it's because he names him Manasseh because he has forgotten my toil. He's forgotten Manasseh, this child, has made Joseph forget his troubles that he had to go through, right? Joseph, we all know the story of Joseph, right? How all the troubles, his trials, his brother selling him into slavery, you know, Potiphar's wife making him get thrown into prison, and all the stuff that happens to Joseph, right? And Joseph overcomes about as much as any person has overcome, right, besides Jesus Christ, right? About as much as anyone has overcome, right? And now he's calling his firstborn son Manasseh and saying, "Your name is Manasseh," meaning that you have made me forget all of my troubles, right? It was worth it. All the things that I had to go through now led to this moment of you being born, right? And I shall call you Manasseh because you were worth it, right? you made me forget the troubles, all that I had to go through to get to where I go through, right? That is what he is calling. That's why he is naming Manasseh, Manasseh, okay? And then the second born you have Ephraim, right? And he names Ephraim because of all the successes that he's had in Egypt, right? Now, after his trouble, he says that he names Ephraim in verse 52. It says, "For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my afflictions," right? So he names Ephraim based on the successes that he's had despite the bad cards that he's been dealt, right? Joseph was dealt a very bad hand, right? But he made the most of it and became very fruitful up until to become the second ruler of Egypt, right? So he had overcome a lot. And so Ephraim gets his name and says, because I was fruitful and because I was successful in this land, I will name you Ephraim, meaning that you will be fruitful, right? And there's some big foreshadowing going on with these names, right? And the history of them going forward, right? There's a lot of foreshadowing why Joseph, and God is very precise, even when it comes down to these names, right? He's even precise when it comes down to these names, because we're going to go on here, and we're going to see that, and why it's just another interesting fact that just God, how precise God is with these things. And God even uses just names of individuals to predict future outcomes, right? And it just blows my mind how precise he is with this stuff, you know, because Joseph, in his right mind, could have never seen this and said, like, I'm naming you this because of what happens thousands of years in the future. There's no way, right? This has to be divine intervention. This has to be divine intervention, right? So we can see here that Ephraim is called, and his name is because he is to become fruitful, right? All right, now if we turn in our Bibles to the next part, we see Ephraim and Manasseh get brought up. Turn, if you would, to Genesis chapter 48. Okay, now in verse 5 it says, "And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land." So basically, Joseph is talking to Jacob, his father, right? Jacob, his father, has come to Egypt now and with all of his brothers. And he is talking to Jacob. Joseph is talking to Jacob. He says, "And now my two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simon shall be mine," right? So Jacob is telling him, Joseph, that your two sons, your first two sons, are now mine. So much so, the same that Reuben and Simon are mine, right? So Jacob is claiming Joseph's first two born sons, right? And we're going to see as we go on, that's important when it comes to the inheritance that Manasseh and Ephraim get here, okay? That's going to be really important, right? So Jacob is claiming Joseph's first two sons here, okay? And it says in verse 6, "And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine." So any child that you have after these two sons shall be yours, okay? "And shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance," okay? So Manasseh and Ephraim become Jacob's children in verse 5, right? If we continue down, look down at verse chapter 9 here. "And Joseph said unto his father, They are my sons whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, Bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them, both Ephraim in his right hand, towards Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand towards Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him." So Joseph, because of Jacob's, he's blind, he can't see anymore, right? Because his vision has gone, right? He is guiding Ephraim in his right hand to Jacob's left hand, right? And he's guiding Manasseh with his left hand towards Israel's right hand, right? There's a reason for that, right? There's a great significance for being just like Jesus. In Hebrews chapter 12, it says that Jesus is sitting on the right hand of God, right? There's an issue of a birthright coming here, okay? Manasseh is the older brother, right? So in the Jewish culture, the birthright would be passed down to Manasseh, right? That's why he is guiding Manasseh to Jacob's right hand, right? He's saying this is going to be, you're getting the greater blessing here, right? You're going to be getting the greater blessing because you're the older, right? So if you would turn, there's an issue of a birthright here. And if you would turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 5, keep your finger here because we will be back in Genesis 48. But if you turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 5, in verse 1 it says, Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel. Now in the parentheses it says, for he was the firstborn. So he was the firstborn of Jacob. But for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright of Israel belonged to Joseph and his sons, right? So that's what is going on right here in this moment, because back in Genesis chapter 35 is when Reuben went unto Bilhah, Jacob's concubine, right? And that's how Reuben loses his birthright, right? He defiled his father's bed. Okay, and so now that birthright falls all the way down to Joseph and his two sons, which is why I think the significant part of Joseph is leading Manasseh to his right hand to get that birthright, right? He's thinking, okay, this is my firstborn. This birthright, as far as Jewish custom, he gets that birthright, right? So turn, if you would, back to Genesis chapter 48. And in verse 14, it says, and Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head. So he kind of does one of these numbers, opposed to what Joseph was trying to do, okay? And he says, and Manasseh said, guiding his hand wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand and removed it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He shall also become a people, and he shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. So we can see now, back to Ephraim's beginning, back to his name, right, of being fruitful. This is why I say this God is so incredible, that he named Ephraim for being fruitful, right? And here we see Jacob's prediction, right? He says that Ephraim is going to be a great people, right? He says he's going to be a people, and he's going to be a nation of his own, right? So we can see here that Jacob is giving Joseph a double portion, right? He's giving him a double portion of the land inheritance, right? Ephraim and Manasseh are both going to be a people. They're going to be one of the 12 tribes, right? They're going to be one of the 12 tribes of Israel here. So I don't know what the deal was with Joseph or with Jacob being blind, whether that's divine intervention or not, whether he knew that Joseph was going to pull that maneuver anyway, and he got ahead of the curve or whatever the case was. But for whatever the case is, he knew where Ephraim was. He knew where to put his right hand. He knew where to put his left hand. And then he makes this prediction, which also falls in line with Ephraim and the fruitful, meaning fruitful. And it says here in verses, and he refused his father in verse 19, and he said, I know it, and he also shall be a Greek, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, in thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh, and the children and Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with the sword and with the bow. Now, I'm not sure about the second part of that verse, what Jacob is talking about with the Amorite. I looked it up, and I could not find any references of him taking a birthright or an inheritance from an Amorite with a sword and a bow. I don't know what he's referring to with that, but either way, he's giving Joseph's kids his blessing, right? He's giving them part of the inheritance of the land inheritance that he promised to Abraham, right? He's giving both of those two in equal right because of all the affliction that Joseph had to go to. And at the end of the day, Joseph forgave his brothers and accepted them back and then helped them in Egypt when the time of famine, right? So because of Joseph, his sons get a great inheritance, right? His sons did nothing to earn these inheritances, right? Manasseh and Ephraim didn't do anything to earn it, right? They were just born, right? Their father was great, and because of Joseph being great, they got an inheritance. They got a blessing from it, right? So we see that Joseph got the double portion here. The next time we want to run across the children of Ephraim, turn, if you would, to Numbers chapter 1. So far, we can see, okay, from the start of things, we can see why the Mormons would want to tie their roots to Ephraim, right? It sounds like a great thing, right? It sounds like a great thing to tie your thing to. But we know that Jacob had 12 sons, right? We know that he had 12 sons already. So for Joseph, both of his sons to get a portion each, one of Jacob's sons had to be diminished a little bit here. One of Jacob's sons doesn't get part of the portion here. So in Numbers chapter 1, in verse 47, you see, but the Levites, after the tribe of their fathers, were not numbered among them. For the Lord had spoken unto Moses, only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel. Okay, so this is a numbering. This is the first numbering of Israel, okay? So Moses set out to number Israel to see how many men could go to war, okay? And the Lord told Moses to take Levi aside because they are the priests. They are to be in charge of the duties of the priesthood, right? So that's where their land inheritance comes from. As we move forward in the Bible, we see that the Levites are given cities. They're not given a chunk of land, right? They're not given a chunk of land in the Promised Land, right? They're just given cities here sporadically throughout Israel, right? So that's how Joseph, both of his sons, can have part of the inheritance, right? That's how both of them have part of the inheritance here. To go further on that, if you would turn to some cross references, Numbers chapter 35. In Numbers chapter 35, in verse 2, it talks about, and the Lord spake unto Moses in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they give unto the Levites of the inheritance of their possessions cities to dwell in. And ye shall give also unto the Levites suburbs for their cities round about them. Turn, if you would, to Joshua chapter 14. Joshua chapter 14. Joshua chapter 14 and verse 4, it says, "And the children of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. Therefore they gave no part unto the Levites in the land, save cities to dwell in, with their suburbs for their cattle and for their substance." So we can see that the inheritance for the land moved from the Levites unto Ephraim, right? That was the extra, that was the double portion that Joseph got, right? That both of his sons were going to get a portion of the inheritance. Now, the next time we see that the Levites come into play here is, turn back, if you would, to Numbers chapter 13. Okay, so this is going to be another positive for Ephraim, right? So far, it started off with Ephraim being fruitful, right? And the blessing that got passed down to him. So we can see why the Mormons want to tie their name to them. Next we have, this story in Numbers 13 is about the 12 spies that they sent to check out Cana, right? This is the 12 spies they went to seek out. And here we see in verse 8 here, of the tribe of Ephraim, Asua, the son of Nun. Now, if you look, it says Asua here, but we do know that the son of Nun, this is Joshua that they're talking about, right? And I don't know why it's spelt like this and this, because even later on in this passage, it spells Joshua out, J-O-S-H-U-A, right? But this is Joshua, the son of Nun. So we know how famous Joshua is. You know, after Moses leads the children of Israel to Israel, right? He doesn't get to go in. Then Joshua takes control because Moses dies, and then leads in and has many victories and takes the land of Cana, right? So Joshua is an Ephraimite, right? He is from the tribe of Ephraim. So that's another positive, right? That's another positive that you can say, okay, maybe I can see where the Mormons are coming from a little bit here. Maybe I can see why they would want to tie their name to Ephraim. Not saying that is right, not saying that they are, but I'm just saying, you can see why they'd want to tie their names to them a little bit here. So there was 12 spies that went into Cana, right? Obviously, 10 were bad, and the 2 were good, as the song goes, right? The 2 being Caleb and Joshua here, okay? So we know the good things that come from Joshua here. So if you look and you see who Manasseh, because all the tribes sent one of their people to spy the land of Cana. As you can see, is Manasseh in verse 11, they sent Gadi. Never heard of him. You don't hear from the rest of the Bible, right? So you can see that Joseph's prediction about Ephraim being a great people, how that's starting to come into fruition, right? You can see how Ephraim is getting the greater blessing here, right? Getting the older brother's blessing here. So Joshua takes over from Moses. Okay, the next time we see Ephraim brought up is in Joshua chapter 16 here. Joshua chapter 16. In verse 5, it says, "And the border of the children of Ephraim, according to their families." So this is now that they have gotten into the land of Cana, right? Now they're dividing up the land, okay? So it's talking about their borders and where they're going to what their possession is, what their inheritance is going to be, okay? So it says, "And the borders of the children of Ephraim, according to their families, was thus, even the border of their inheritance on the east side of Atarathadar, unto Beth Horon the upper, and the border went out toward the sea of Michmath on the north side, and on the border went about eastward to Tanashiloh, and it passed on east unto Johanan, and it went down from Johanan to Adaroth and to Narath, and came to Jericho and went out Jordan." Okay, so all those things that they just named out, the only one that I am familiar with is Jericho, right? We all know about the story of Jericho, right? So Jericho, as far as if you look on a map of Israel, I was going to print out a map, but I feel like we just go through the history today, and then maybe next week we'll go into the map and the layout of the map and how that all works out. But Jericho is just north of Jerusalem, right? So we know that if we continue reading this passage, Manasseh, their inheritance is just north of Ephraim, right? So Ephraim is wedged right in between Benjamin's inheritance and Manasseh's inheritance, right? And that goes from Jordan, the River Jordan, all the way over to the sea, right? That goes all the way over to the Dead Sea, okay? So that's what their inheritance is, all right? So it's wedged, it's just north of Jerusalem, okay? So that's important when we get into the map and the layout and the future of what happens to Ephraim and who they become, what the descendants of Ephraim become in the future here. But we know that their borders, the southern border is Jericho, okay? And that is just north of Jerusalem, which is, we can tell it is Benjamin's inheritance here. So if we continue reading in verse 10, and they drave out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell among the Ephraimites unto this day and serve under tribute. Now that's very important as we go forward. They didn't drive out all the Canaanites, right? And all the Canaanites, the problem with that was the Canaanites served false idols, right? They served other gods, right? And they did not drive them all out. Now, if we turn over in Joshua chapter 17, a page over, we're going to see this become even more important here. In Joshua chapter 17, in verse 10, you see, southward it was Ephraim, and northward it was Manasseh. So that, just like I talked about, Manasseh lay to the north of Ephraim, okay? And then Benjamin below it. So it's wedged in between Manasseh and Benjamin here. Southward it was Ephraim, and northward it was Manasseh, and the sea is his border. And they met together in Asher on the north and in Issachar on the east. And Manasseh had in Issachar and Asher, Bethshean, and her towns, and Ibleam, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Dor, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Endor, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Taanach, and her towns, and the inhabitants of Megiddo, and her towns, even three countries. Yet the children of Manasseh could not drive out the inhabitants of those cities, but the Canaanites would dwell in the land. Yet it came to pass, when the children of Israel were waxen strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute, but did not utterly drive them out. And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua. So remember, Joshua is an Ephraimite, right? So maybe they think that they have some pull here with Joshua. Maybe they think that, hey, Joshua is going to listen to our cry here. Maybe Joshua is going to hear our cry, and he's going to listen to us, and he's going to help us out here, right? So in verse 14 it says, And the children of Joseph spake unto Joshua, saying, why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit? Seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto. So he's saying, because I'm a great people, why don't you come out? Because of what my daddy did. Because of what Joseph has done. Remember that time when you guys all came to Egypt and Joseph all helped you out when you didn't have any food? Remember what my daddy did? Remember what my daddy did, you know, to help you? So why don't you guys just, you know, come along and help us take out the Canaanites? You know, how about you give us a hand? And I love what Joshua, he doesn't give them any slack. Remember, he's an Ephraimite. He is part of their blood, right? He is a brother of these people, right? He doesn't cut them any slack, right? He doesn't, you know, I don't care. I don't care who your dad was. He was my father too. But here you go in verse 15. And Joshua answered them, If thou be a great people, then get thee up to the wood country, and cut down for thyself therein the land of the Perizzites, and of the giants, if Mount Ephraim be too narrow for thee. So if this land be too narrow for me, then go get it. If you be a great people, then go get it, right? If you're so great, if you're so mighty, then why don't you go up there and get it? Stop talking about what your dad did. Stop talking about what your dad did and all the persecutions, all the trials that he overcame. We don't care who your dad is, right? And this reminds me of kind of, you know, second and third and fourth generation Christians, right? How we kind of dropped the ball, right? When we were born, I was born into a family. Now, we got out of church, but my parents put me in a private school, and that gave me the opportunity to have the gospel pounded into my brain, right? And if it wasn't for that, if it wasn't for being a little child and having the gospel pounded into my head, I wouldn't be here today. I could promise you that I wouldn't be here today, right? I did nothing to earn that. I did nothing to deserve that, right? My parents were saved before I was born, and they went to church, right? So then I had to get drugged to church with them, right? I did nothing to earn that. I did nothing to receive the blessing of hearing the gospel over and over and over again as a child, right? I didn't deserve that, right? So it's not about the blessing that you get. It's they have a chance. Ephraim has a chance to build upon the blessing that was given to them. They didn't earn that birthright, right? They didn't do anything. All because of what Joseph did. Joseph earned the right for them to get a double portion, right? He earned that right, right? Ephraim has a blessing here. And they can either build upon that blessing or they can claim, look what my daddy did, right? And that's why I say this reminds me of a lot of what second generation Christians and third generation Christians and fourth generation Christians, we're dropping the ball. We're dropping the ball because if we were doing our part, if we were building upon the blessings that were given to us, then the church wouldn't be falling apart, right? Fourth and fifth generation Christians wouldn't be going contemporary, right? They wouldn't be doing all these things. If they were in the Bible doing these things that they should have been doing, the church would be in good standing right now, right? More people would be saved. They'd be having babies. Their babies would be coming to church. But that's not what's going on, right? That's not what's going on. As the generations progress, they fall off, right? But if we were doing our part, and that's why Ephraim kind of reminds me of second and third generation Christians, right? Claiming what my father did. My father was a deacon. My father was a preacher. My father held this position in the church. It's not about what your father did. You were given a great blessing. It's up to you to build upon that blessing now, right? It's on you to build upon that blessing. And that's what Ephraim is doing right now. They're claiming, look what my daddy did. Look what my daddy did. And you know, you should give me all these blessings because of what Joseph already done, right? So if you continue reading on here in verse 16, it says, and the children of Joseph said, the hill is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they who are of Bethshean and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spake unto the house of Joseph, even to Ephraim and to Manasseh, saying, thou art a great people, and hast great power. Thou shalt not have one lot only, but the mountain shall be thine, for it is wood, and thou shalt cut it down, and the goings of it shall be thine. For thou shalt drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots, and though they be strong, right? But from what we just seen in Joshua chapter 16, they don't do that. It says that the Canaanites dwell with Ephraim till this day, right? They don't do that. They are strong. They don't have the faith that Joseph had. Joseph had the faith to overcome all these different trials and all these different tribulations, and they don't seem to have an ounce of it, right? They don't seem to have an ounce of that faith that they can do this, right? They want the possessions, but they don't want to do the work to achieve those possessions, right? It comes with a little bit of work. They think that it should just be handed down to them, that it should just be given to them, right? So the next time that we see Ephraim is in, actually, you know what, we should probably end it right there. We'll continue on with the history of this. It's getting a little late, sorry. But we'll pick up on this next week. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this day, Lord. Thank you for the opportunity to get to do this, Lord. I just ask and pray that you would be with us, be with Pastor today as he preaches, Lord. I just pray that you'd give the congregation what we need to get through our weeks, get through our days, Lord. And I just pray that you'd open up our hearts, open up our ears to hear your words. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.